Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod, where we talk to all the interesting people of the San Luis Valley. Joining us today in our studio on the south side of Alamosa is John Mestis. We're going to learn a lot about this fascinating young man in this episode of the Valley Pod. John, it's good to see you this morning. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's good to see you as well, Chris. Happy to talk about a little bit of the history here in the Valley.
Outstanding. So we met John Mestis a few days ago, Owen and I did. Alamosa Citizen is doing a project in 2026 that we see tied to the 150 years of Colorado statehood, which we're celebrating here in 2026. We came up with a project we call 150 Faces of the San Luis Valley in our effort at Alamosa Citizen to really put some perspective on the generational nature of the valley, the history of the valley, the people who call the valley home, including young people like John Mestis, who we're going to visit with here. John, we brought into our studio recently to do a photo session with, as we're doing with each person involved in the 150 Faces of the San Luis Valley project. So we wanted to introduce John through that project, and then we're going to talk to him about what he does. We're going to start with John. How old are you?
I'm 17 at the moment. I'm going to be turning 18 here, April 26th, so looking forward to it.
And you're graduating from Antonito?
Yes, sir. May 22nd, heading to Fort Lewis College in Durango for business admin here this fall. So.
And yeah. I'm going to kind of describe you a little bit here. You're an archaeologist. You're a rancher. Sixth generation
rancher here in the San Luis Valley, and maybe not a full-blown archaeologist, but advocational at the moment. I'd like to be an archaeologist in the future, though.
Say that again.
An advocationalist. So it means I do it mainly as a volunteer and as a passion, as a hobby.
Right.
I haven't had the pleasure of working on any actual sites in tandem with universities at the moment, but it's something I look forward to doing in the future.
And we're going to, as you'll hear from John, you're going to learn why. Why Fort Lewis College is lucky to have this person joining them in the fall, why he is going to be an archaeologist, I predict, why you're going to hear a lot more from him in the future years, because he has a grasp of the valley that we've never heard, much less from a 17-year-old. So we're going to start first with where you live, where you were raised, how you were raised. Let's start there.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Chris. I'm honored.
Yeah.
So I was actually born here in the San Luis Valley in Manassa. My father is Alex Mestis and my grandfather is Johnny Mestis. So he's a staple in the community as well, too. We've been ranchers here for six generations, as I mentioned, and my great-grandfather and my great-grandfather before them were actually county commissioners here in Conejos.
What John probably doesn't realize yet is that my oldest brother, Vince, married his grandfather, John's older sister, Esther. So we have a distance family relationship between the Mestis family and the Lopez family. John may not have realized that, huh, John?
I did not.
Yeah, so that's how I knew of you, and that's why we brought you into the 150 Faces project of the San Luis Valley, is because I'd been doing some scouting. And in the project, we want both young faces like yourself, we want others who have been here, we want it to really show a demographic of the San Luis Valley, and that's how we ended up selecting you, because I was aware of the work you do, or the hobby work you do around your ranch. So let's go there and explain to us what's sitting in front of us here. People that are listening won't be able to see, but we'll put a photo out. Let's just start there. With the collection that you have several boxes. I'm going to let you talk about which one you ever want to start with and give us the context to it. So let's start with the big box.
Okay, so to preface this, the site that all of these frames of artifacts were collected from was found along the Conejos River, which is a tributary of the Rio Grande. So the San Luis Valley has been a really important place culturally for roughly about 14,000 years since the Paleolithic, because it was the headwaters. It had the headwaters of the Rio Grande. And not only that, but there were a lot of natural resources. But one interesting thing that we see about the valley is that a lot of these really older, the Paleolithic sites and the transitional Paleolithic sites are focused on the far northern and the southern edges and then along the mountains, because the middle of the valley was a lot too swampy and boggy. So these frames of artifacts that I have here come from a Pueblo to late Archaic site found in the middle of the valley. So you don't see any Paleolithic artifacts in front of me. These are much more recent. I'd say 3,500 years to roughly 500 years ago.
So let's stop there and give some explanation to John. How is it that you ended up in the fields, on the ranch, looking for artifacts, just as a wonderment of yourself, just as someone who said, I'm just like you went out and play. Right. Mm-hmm. You just went out and then you started to figure out what you were seeing and you just took it from there. How long have you been doing this? And give us some perspective of all of this.
Well, I've been collecting as a hobby maybe for 2 years, but my mother and father have been taking me out arrow hunting since I was large enough to walk, really. And that was what introduced me to these archaeological sites and the importance of our heritage here in the valley.
So as you look at these different artifacts, as you look, what is the most unique or most special one? And describe it for us as you look at your cases here.
So we have some really colorful pieces of what is called agatized dolomite that comes from a quarry in northern Texas, which is the Alabates Dolomite Quarry. And this was traded roughly 300 miles or so, give or take a few, on foot. So this exotic material was so sought after that the Native Americans would have traded for it all the way from northern Texas.
So one of the things, you know, listening to you, we met you recently, it seems to me that the land really speaks to you, that you are someone wanting to understand the prehistoric nature of the valley, the history, the centuries, the early people of the, you seem to be fascinated, or the land seems to be talking to you that way, that you're out there discovering, figuring it out, and you're really doing it on your own from what I can figure out.
It's the largest high alpine valley on earth, and there are thousands of archaeological sites here. I think there's been a lot of work done on the transitional Paleolithic by Dennis Stanford and people like Cynthia Irwin-Williams and her colleagues, but the later and Puebloan ephemeral occupation camps and late Archaic to late Oshara tradition sites have not had a lot of work done on them. So I feel like it's an area to capitalize and to inform the public as to why these areas that look so barren and so dry are actually not only ecologically rich, but culturally rich as well too.
You know, so as you talk about your different artifacts, the findings you've discovered, I mean, you have dozens of material here. And again, we're going back 10,000 plus years to, how do you, give us some of that process. How are you figuring this out? Obviously, you're using reference material, you're doing research. When you find something that you think is significant.
So the cultures that occupied the San Luis Valley in prehistory used stone tools. And as a byproduct of production of those stone tools, you're going to produce a lot of small little chips and flakings. And whenever you see these areas that have a high density of chips and flakings, it means that there's an archaeological site. And if you look around more, sometimes you can discover ancient projectile points, ground stone tools, things along that line that lead you to believe that this is indeed an ancient area.
And where, what parts of the valley are you particularly, or have you particularly been focused on in your research, in your discovery, in your amateur sleuthing, if you will?
I'd say mainly south central to far south. There's been a lot of work done in the Alamosa County and especially up near the Great Sand Dunes where they had the Stewart Cattle Guard Folsom site, and then also on the western portion of the valley, they did the La Botica, the Paleocultural Resource Group, which was actually a lot more recent than Dennis Stanford's work with the Cattle Guard Folsom site. So I focused more so on the South Central, where there hasn't been as many documented areas.
You're also going into neighboring northern New Mexico.
Absolutely. We have a lot of private land there in northern New Mexico in the San Juan Mountains. And I've actually been lucky enough to come across a historic era occupation site, which has evidence of European influences. So I've actually found metal artifacts as well there, too.
So when you say that I came across or I saw this or I discovered this or I found this, what does that mean? Like, you're just out there on your own, or maybe people with you, and you know what you're looking for, though, at this point. You know where you're also looking. How does that happen?
So the thing is that the soil always has to be exposed if you want to find these archaeological sites. There are archaeological sites, you know, pretty much everywhere that there was water and that there would have been food. So, for instance, here in the Alamosa Wildlife Refuge, there's, you know, lots of grasslands, and there absolutely would be native occupation sites there. But unless you have the exposed soil and ground to find those around where the water was, it's challenging to find these actual artifacts. So I go to where the water is or was, and I look for the exposed ground to be able to find these ancient native sites. But I don't really like collecting heavily as much unless they're endangered.
As we see the valley drying, as we notice less snow, as we see warmer temperatures, we're here, just finished February, March looks great, warmer temperatures in the wintertime. Is that helping you, hurting you? That, give us some perspective about the climate and what that's doing either for the archaeological sites that exist. Give us some perspective there then.
So it's opening up new opportunities when it comes to above the tree line, because there actually are Native American sites at 10,000 feet and above, and usually they're rock blinds. And they were used a lot later on, but they would push game at the very height of summer through these rock blinds at the top of the Rocky Mountains. And since a lot of these, they aren't exactly glaciers, but they're like snow caps, have been melting, and we've been finding preserved organic artifacts in Alaska and in Canada. And it's also a possibility to find them here in Colorado. They found a preserved atlatl spear dart above Boulder in one of these ice caps. But down here in the valley, it harms me, because I need that erosion to find these artifacts, which is caused by usually precipitation or with heavy wind. But it also hurts me as a rancher. We need that water to refill our aquifers and to refill our reservoirs. So that damages me as an experimental archaeologist and as a rancher.
Hey, we're going to keep talking to John Mestis. We'll be right back. This is the Valley Pod.
Looking for the freshest food in the valley? Introducing the new SLB Local Foods Directory, where you can meet your neighbors and eat better. From colorful potatoes and crisp greens to farm fresh eggs, dairy, and meat, find exactly who grows your food right here in the valley. Support local, eat fresh, and strengthen our community. Are you a local farmer or producer? Add your information. Visit alamosacitizen.com today and discover the freshest food from the heart of the valley.
Hey, we're back. We're talking to John Mestis. He's a 17-year-old. I'm going to call him a wonder kid because, you know, the more you hang out with him, the more you talk to him, the more you listen to him, you just learn a lot. You learn a lot about the valley. You learn a lot about ranching. You learn a lot about the history, the archaeological sites that exist in the valley. You know, I just think he's an amazing young person that we're lucky to be hearing from. He's going to Fort Lewis College in May. A little sad about that because, you know, Fort Lewis College, but no, Durango's a great campus. I'm just kidding you on that. Hey, John, you were talking a little bit before we went into the break about also being a rancher.
Yes,
and
sir.
How the climate is changing and how that is making it more challenging to ranch. But I want to just give us some perspective to your family, the Mestis family, because your great-grandfather, Frank, I met him when they lived in Antonito growing up there. Your grandfather, John, put me on my first horse, taught me how to ride across the river and take horses through the water in a cattle drive up the Brazos. That's how far back I go with your family, so I understand how important ranching is to the Mestis family. Give us some perspective there of how that's doing, your cattle operations. Give us some perspective about your great-grandfather, Frank.
So it's just really a quintessential Western lifestyle. We came in from New Mexico probably about 175 years ago here into the San Luis Valley, and it was mainly sheep at that time. We were mainly herding sheep, and then we actually had some land out on the Llano as well there too. And there at the time, there were a lot more Basque sheep herders than there were ranchers in the valley. And eventually, whenever my grandfather took hold of the operation from his father, they still had some sheep, but they mainly transitioned their operation to cattle from there. And they had some financial struggles at the time. So the scale of the operation, the scale of it was just a lot smaller. And that's come a very far due to my grandfather. Mainly.
But it's also something that a lifestyle that you want to inherit, that you want to continue on, which I find a little interesting given your other passion of being and growing into an archaeologist, your other passion of so I find that, but they probably are compatible.
There's a lot of independence in being a rancher in that you're able to be out there on land and interacting with the range and with your herd. So I talked about this previously whenever I was in here with you last time about the importance of rotational grazing as a rancher. So say 200, 300 years ago, the valley would have had a lot more wild game that acted to keep these native grasses in check. But as a rancher, as a way to steward the land, we can put our cattle on one area that is maybe has a very tall grass and it needs to be grazed. And then once that the grass is a little bit shorter, we can take them off that area, and it helps to prevent large scale wildfires. And then, but also we have to be careful as ranchers because it can have the exact opposite effect too. Overgrazing can induce soil erosion and things to that effect. So as a rancher in the 21st century, I've been trying to help optimize my grandfather's and my dad's ranch. So recently we've just been installing solar on all our wells out in the Llano.
That's interesting.
It's a great way to just be out there in the land, taking care of your cattle. And it also gives me an opportunity to go and explore these areas that have the archaeological sites.
And it's really through your lifestyle that took you into the fields that had you hunting for rocks, for precious metals, for whatever you could find archaeologically. Go ahead.
I was always raised that way. I never would have had the opportunity otherwise. So a lot of people who are ranchers and farmers, they'll be out there in those environments and they'll be collecting these things and they won't know the significance or the importance of them. And that's also why it needs to be out there. The people need to be educated about what they're finding when they're ranching and they're out there on these sites.
Well, I think what I appreciate, John, is that you're able to teach us, that you're, as a young person, you're able to say, hey, look where we live. Look how historically significant it is. Look at where the earliest peoples and how far back that is, and look at some of the artifacts that have been left behind from past generations. That's what I find really interesting and worthwhile talking to you.
And then it gives us perspective as to what we're leaving behind as well, too. So the Native Americans would think, how is this action going to affect seven generations from now? So I feel like that's something that we can use, because usually in America, it's, you know, get mine, you can get yours sort of mindset. But in the future, for our children, there are going to be depleted natural resources. There are going to be a lack of jobs. So I feel like I just want to try to prevent that.
Really, a really great way of thinking, Owen, when you listen to John Mesteson, he's even talking about things you leave behind as us. Mm-hmm. You're really thinking ahead and thinking about past generations and how to help us here.
Yeah, because a lot of the things that we're using now aren't like the Native Americans. They would use a lot of wood. They would use a lot of bone. They would use a lot of material that was degradable. But now in an era of plastics and metal, we have to be a lot more aware of the effect that we have. Because I've been in extremely remote areas in the mountains and have found trash and sign of humans. And it's heartbreaking. It really is, because we have impacted everything around us.
What do you think of this guy, Owen? I know that you and I've talked about meeting John through the 150 Faces Project. We're both fascinated by what he does out there. I mean, just an interesting young guy.
Yeah, no, I think it's refreshing to hear to hear a young person like yourself with such passion and not beaten down by life, you know, as a lot of people can be. But I think I really appreciate your approach to ranching and the long-term sustainability. Because I think at the end of the day, your passion is archaeology and ranching, but I think you could really boil it down to preservation of the environment and ecology and making sure. I think, you know, not enough people do think seven generations ahead. I think you're right. I think we're barely our generation and maybe our grandkids, you know, plant the tree, but we're not really planting a lot of trees. So thanks for planting some trees, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Of course. You know, when we look at all the artifacts you've brought with us this morning, which one or which case is more special to you, or which is the most interesting? I mean, they're all interesting.
I have not been able to find any published papers or references to the unique pottery that we find here in the San Luis Valley. And this frame is collected from along the Canales River at a private site I have. It has three different types of pottery in it. It has plainware. It has gritware, which is, I think, made out of a type of granite, is the temper. And the third type is impressed, and it's corrugated. And it's completely different from the pottery that we find in the Southwest, with the slight exception of maybe very early corrugated ware.
And how do you go verifying? How do you take something and then verify it?
So I look at other examples found in the archaeological record. So I like to look at sites that are relatively the same age and go to those assemblages and compare the assemblages that I'm finding. And if there are any outliers, then I know that it came from a different age group. And I also look at the patination of things. So for instance, something that is deposited 1,000 years ago is going to have a completely different patina than something that was deposited 10,000 years ago. And then you also have to think about the environments that they are deposited in, because the San Luis Valley at one time was a high alpine lake. It was a Pleistocene lake, Lake Alamosa, which is what caused the Great Sand Dunes to form. That was the lake bed after it dried up and got blown to the northern end of the valley. But that also caused a lot of alkaline in our soils. And some of the artifacts that you see here have a very thick alkaline patina, which is also a side effect of that. So if we look at artifacts that have a very thick alkaline patina versus ones that are, you know, more fresh, we can say that, you know, maybe this is more recent, maybe this is more old. And then looking at the diagnostic features. So for instance, projectile points are made in a certain manner. So the Puebloan era was mainly categorized by the use of bone arrow technology. And then before that, you had the basket makers. And before that, you had the Oshara and the Paleolithic. And they used the atlatl dart points. And these are a lot more larger and robust than the arrowheads that we find. So whenever you find a stratified site, and stratified means that it's just layer after layer buried one and after another. And you can, archaeologists can excavate this layer by layer. And then they can see, oh, well, this carbon came from one layer, so this is how old these artifacts must be. Well, if we find projectile points in those certain strata, we're able to tell how old they are. And based on how they're manufactured, if we find those same style of projectile points that aren't in stratified sites, we can roughly give an age estimate to them.
So, John, your recitation of what you just went through, that's all largely self-taught.
Yeah, pretty much. I've also had the absolute blessing of being able to have the correspondence with Gary Atkinson, who is a former archaeologist here in the San Luis Valley. I have the blessing to have his collection as well to study. But I've talked to a lot of ranchers and farmers here who have collected their entire lives and who have gone to these native sites, and maybe not as archaeologists, but they've collected a lot. They've seen a lot come and go, and you can learn a lot from these people. And I feel like it's important as not only an avocational archaeologist, but maybe as an archaeologist in the future, to work in tandem with these collectors that are more so on an amateur level, because they still have a lot of information to give us.
When you go to Fort Lewis, what is it that you will study? What is it that you're hoping degree-wise? What is all of that for you that you're planning to achieve next? What is all that about?
So even though my passion is archaeology, I really love ranching as well too. So I'm going for business administration to help me, you know, better operate the ranch. But it's also the same credit requirement to take a minor for archaeology as it is to double major. So depending, I may double major in archaeology to try and be able to get some of these sites documented myself and be able to work on them professionally.
Well, it's really, really been a pleasure to listen to you talk about your hobby, your passion, talk about your life, and talk about where things are going. It's been a very illuminating conversation with you. Really appreciate you coming in here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you've been listening to the Valley Pod on our episode with John Mestis. John is a 17-year-old headed to Fort Lewis College, a sixth-generation rancher here in the San Luis Valley. I'm sure he'll be back. The Valley Pod is produced by Owen Woods, part of the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. See you around the valley.
Hi, I'm Marty Jones, host of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. Join us every other Wednesday as we talk to outdoor enthusiasts, wildlife experts, recreationists, lovers of the outdoors, and people who spend their days and their lives outside. On the Outdoor Citizen, we talk all things outside and outdoors, provide you with the latest data and measurements for water and weather, give you upcoming outdoor events, and keep you up to date on the latest news. The Outdoor Citizen is brought to you by the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, enjoy the out of doors.